and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT, pleased as always to be speaking with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Well, hello, Jennifer, and how are you today?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Are you accomplishing wonders?
Accomplishing wonders. Oh, I hope so.
Excellent.
We'll find out in the next 10 or 15 minutes.
Exactly.
In this episode
no
of
pressure.
Higher Ed. No pressure. So, Ed, what I want to talk about this week is something that it makes me feel very calm to think about a flow of ideas. I want to talk about thinking and how ideas flow and where ideas come from. Deep, relaxing breath. So how do we start that conversation? How do we think about the flow of ideas?
Well, this is, you know, of course, one of the elements that Mike Starbird and I write about in the five elements of effective thinking. We argue that this is one of the important elements to generate and create new ideas, which is really a consciousness that ideas flow. In fact, you know, when you think of the iconic visual image, and this is radio, so it's perfect for visual. You think of the iconic visual image for when someone has an idea, they think of a light bulb going off. Bing!
Uh-huh.
That is the most ridiculous icon for that because ideas do not happen in a vacuum.
Okay, why is it ridiculous? They don't happen in a vacuum. So if you were going to replace the light bulb, what would you put instead?
It would be an ever-flowing kind of stream.
So you're saying that if I'm sitting in my car and I'm driving somewhere and all of a sudden I think, oh, that's how I can fix my lawnmower, that's not really popping into my head. It's coming from somewhere.
That's right. That's right. In fact, you know, as a mathematician, if I put on my math hat for a second, a lot of times mathematicians find solutions to really vexing riddles or conundrums or trying to prove a theorem. They do that in the shower. A lot of times, you know, the old joke is if you can't prove a theorem, take a shower, and that will help because it relaxes you. What you were saying earlier about kind of having a Zen moment, relaxing the mind. And there's two elements to this facet. One is that a consciousness that ideas come from other ideas. There's no idea that just kind of pops out. Every idea can be traced back to other human thought. And so the idea of recognizing that is a big thing, especially in education. You know, take math, for example. You know how most students learn math? They're memorizing all these facts and formulas and algorithms and just hope that they can kind of vomit it back out if the right question happens to hit.
Uh-huh.
But the truth is that these ideas all come together. And it's as if you're looking at an image on your phone. And instead of looking at the whole image, you're memorizing pixel by pixel what color everything is. You can memorize it that way, but it's much harder. It's much easier to see one image, one vision, one suite of ideas. You understand that one thing really well. You see the whole landscape. You can then do anything in particular.
So wait, I want to go back to what you said at the beginning of this answer when you're talking about ideas and sort of the origination of ideas. Is there such a thing, though, as a completely original idea? Or does every idea have sort of the DNA then of previous ideas?
That you have intellectual fingerprints on top of any new idea that you or I have. Absolutely. Now, there are new ideas that just haven't been considered before, but they are totally influenced by our bias, prejudice, experience, and our learning. And it's just a reality that it's our life's journey that leads us to new ideas, but therefore that's the flow of it, that you have to understand that that's part of the process. But there's nothing that just happens completely without the stimulation of other ideas. No.
So talk about how this sort of flows through higher education than in education in general than in learning. So, you know, when you enroll for courses in higher education, you're enrolling for math over here and history over here and English over there and maybe Italian over there. But those ideas must be flowing in and out of each other at some point.
Absolutely. Now, if you are kind of just doing a checklist education, then you might miss that. These ideas do flow together. But even within a subject, I would argue that people aren't seeing the flow of ideas. And more importantly, and now if we talk to folks that have their formal education behind them, more importantly, it's the flow of ideas from the vantage point of when you have a new idea. When you're confronted with a new idea, whether it's your idea that you created or an idea that you've heard from someone else but new to you, what do you do next? The flow of ideas tells you that every time you encounter a new idea, you should say, what's next? How can I reapply it? How can I connect it with something else? How can I make a new epiphany from that new idea? It never ends with a new idea. A new idea is always a beginning, never an ending.
So you don't just jump up and down and say, hey, I finally figured that out and sort of put a bow on that and be done with it.
Well, you do the first part. You celebrate, but you don't put the bow on it. That's exactly right, Jennifer. Instead, you say, okay, this is great. We did it. We have a solution. Now, what else can we do with it? How can we repackage it, repurpose it, generalize it, extend it, apply it to something totally different? By doing so, we are now developing a mindset of engineering our own creativity. And we've talked about this before. We can be more creative by intent.
What I'm wondering is, yes. And I know in a future episode, we're going to talk about sort of how age and learning intersect, but is this something that you can explain and sort of instill in very, very young learners? I mean, it seems like a bit of a complex concept.
It should be. Well, it is a very complex concept, but it's a habit, and it should be infused in the curriculum from the very, very beginning. Every time you have a new idea, you have to ask what comes next. And we talked about questions a while back in the previous episode. But the bottom line is that that's a habit, that every time you read something in the paper, every time you listen to something online, whatever it is, you have to say to yourself, okay, what do I do with this that no one else has done with this? And that's a habit of living that should be taught at every grade level so that when we finish our formal education, we continue to be learners.
All right. So I'm gonna show you a habit and I'm going to ask a question.
Oh, I love both those things.
What is
if it's a good habit.
I think it is.
There are some bad habits, too.
Right. No, I think this is a good one. So what is the next puzzler you have for us?
Oh, are you ready for
we're ready for
math,
a new one this week.
Puzzler?
I'm ready for a new one.
Actually, I'm a little bit stuck. Maybe you can help
me. Oh, okay.
Because I want to do one, but it involves me talking about a group of people, some of who are honest and some who are dishonest. And I don't know what group, I mean, should I say mathematicians?
Well,
I'm trying to figure out. I don't want to offend anyone.
I know. Well, you know, oftentimes journalists wind up kind of near the bottom of surveys about trustworthy professions.
Is that true?
Or where people, surprisingly so. So, you know, you can.
The group that contains Walter Cronkite?
It also contains.
Don't mention
others.
Okay.
So if you want to substitute journalists, I think we can all live with that.
You wouldn't be offended?
I would not be offended.
Representing the world of journalists, you're okay?
I'm okay with
and
that.
And everyone will understand this is tongue-in-cheek?
It's totally tongue-in-cheek.
Okay,
totally.
In that case, here is the Riddler. Okay, so you have 100 journalists at a certain convention.
Okay.
Okay. Now, each journalist is either dishonest or honest.
Okay.
Those are the only possibilities.
Okay.
And we're given two pieces of information that are, in fact, facts. The first one is at least one of the journalists, in fact, is honest.
Okay.
And the second fact is that given any two of the journalists, at least one of the two was, in fact, crooked.
Okay.
So those are the two facts you have.
Got it.
You have at least one that's honest, and then you're also told that given any two journalists, at least one of them, in fact, is dishonest.
Okay.
The question is, just given those two facts and the fact that you have 100 journalists, and they're either honest or dishonest,
okay,
can you determine how many journalists were honest and how many were dishonest? And if so, how many? And if not, why not?
Whoa, this is a triple barrel question.
I love it.
Well, we will give the answer on a future episode. My inclination to
maybe.
The first, my inclination
if you're
to
nice
the,
to me.
I will do my best.
Thank you.
So I want to say, yeah, there's got to be a way to figure this out.
Okay,
sure.
Well, there's a good guess.
There's got to be a way.
Well,
I don't think you would pose an unfigure outable math hanger, would you?
Well, we had one with the chessboard. It was something that couldn't be done.
Right, that's
so,
true. It could not.
But we could prove. We could prove it couldn't be done.
Right, that's so, true. So we're looking for proof. All right. Well,
some future episode, maybe I'll reveal.
Future episode, we will
it's
try
a
to
math
get back
hanger.
To that one.
It's a math hanger for now.
That's right.
Which
you
again flows in. It's a flow of ideas, right? People are going to flow into the next whenever.
It's a flow of ideas.
Thank
that's
you.
Right. So I want to go back to that idea that you can introduce this habit or teach this habit at a young age and have that be part of learning. We've talked a lot about when we've talked about habits, when we've talked about ideas that are sort of counter to the way things are set up right now. How do you go about introducing something like that into kind of an established system, especially something like flow of ideas, which is, you know, makes total sense when you explain it, but it's not a concrete thing. It's like, here's a book.
Right.
Flow
right.
of idea.
Yeah. No. But the answer is that it becomes a practice. So every time a new idea is exposed, however it happens, whether you create it or whether you just hear about it, there has to be this habit of what can I do with that beyond the current purpose that's there. And by the way, this is not just true in higher education. If you're running a meeting, if you have a team with you, this should just be the habit of a new idea is out there. Okay, what else do we do with this new idea? But let me just say that in education, you can do this literally from kindergarten, nursery school, where in fact it is done, you know, what comes next kind of thing, to all the way up. Just literally, here's a new thing. In fact, here's something I do in my classroom. Before the class ends, I will say to my students, what do you think would come next? Now, they don't even know the stuff. They don't know calculus. They don't know all of it. But they might just say, well, we did this thing with quadratics. Maybe we can think about it with cubics. Or, you know, but it forces them to look at the material in a different way. They're forward thinking, which is really the point, is to get them just in the habit of wondering what should come next.
Okay, I'm wondering about something.
Yeah.
You've mentioned a couple of times that you have a really cool story about Euclid.
Yeah, I'm going to save that one.
Are you saving that one?
I'm saving that one.
Is that for a different episode?
I'm going to save that one because I'm going to tease you. That's what we'll call a Euclid hanger. But let me just say one thing about this thing, which sounds so doable. Oh, it's easy to do this, right? To every time I see a new idea, to ask what comes next. This is really hard. So if any one of our listeners is engaged in this, let them know that this is not easy, because when you work really hard to generate a new idea, it's like climbing the summit of a very tall mountain. And you get to the very top and you look around and you see that panorama and you see that, you know, that lack of oxygen, and you just feel this high. It's hard to imagine there's anything left to do because you're on top. What you have to do with this mindset is to put yourself back at the foot of the mountain and keep climbing still. And that's really hard. So what we're suggesting here is not easy.
It sounds like, though, that another sort of corollary to that idea is to learn to get satisfaction from the process and not the finished product, or not the top of the mountain, is to learn to enjoy getting there.
Not only that, but of course, that's the key to education. Education is all about a process. When people talk through, oh, I have to get through that requirement, they've totally missed the point. It is the act of going through that process that is the education. And so you're absolutely right. And education, of course, should be joyful.
Well, Ed, it is always a joy to talk about issues related to higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Ed, we thank you as always for your time and a wonderful discussion today.
Well, my pleasure. Always good to be with you. And let's do it soon.
Keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org and subscribe on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.